CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! From my travels, this is indeed a live program. I'm Bob Kincaid, that is. Just call me Bob, where it's all friendly like here. This is the Horn, the home of conversation radio for almost 6 years. Yeah, a week from tonight, we will be six full years old on, and I mean, older than that, really, because this all goes back to 2003. But we premiered The Horn on October the 24th, 2005. So 6 years old next Monday, which is pretty cool. And it is a testament to you, to your determination, that there be some independent voice, some independent conversation, some independent seeking for solutions. And you're the only reason it continues. The Horn is listener-supported conversation radio. Can't happen without you. And each month we seek enough contributions to get us to the next month. We are lagging far behind this month. We finished last month in the red as well by a couple of $100. We are more than a couple of $100 in the red this time through. But be that as it may, I got to tell you a little bit about what I was up to. On Thursday morning, beginning at the beginning, as is always best, Thursday morning I got up at 3 a.m. You'll recall we had a prayer meeting Wednesday program. Got up at 3 a.m., got out the door at 4, and headed down the mountain to Jaeger Airport. And it surprised me to find out that the monster killer coal trucks are even on the roads at that hour, running empty and hell-bent for leather to get to the dock so they can get their first load in, because those poor, ignorant souls are paid by the ton and not by the mile or by the hour. About halfway down there, I got a phone call from our friends at Delta. They're not ready when you are. Letting me know that my 6:10 departure had been delayed to 7:30 because Delta apparently drives its employees like borrowed mules, and that includes their pilots. So this is the second time this has happened, you might recall. They had to bump the flight back by about an hour and a half so that the pilot and the crew could be deemed technically sufficiently well rested to get behind the stick with about 75 souls in their charge. So I flew into Atlanta and changed planes in Atlanta. You know, if you're on your way to heaven or hell, you change planes in Atlanta. I don't understand the people. I hate going through that Atlanta airport. It's easy. It's simple. It's a really easy airport to negotiate. And got on board another little hop flight. This one, and now the thing from Charleston to Atlanta was apparently purchased used from Hobbit Airlines. It holds 76 people, that Canadair J220, but it does so most uncomfortably, and I usually like a window seat, but the window was meaningless for anybody taller than a child, and with the curve of the aircraft, I was kind of sort of had that elephant man thing going on with my left shoulder up against my ear. Really, you fly anymore these days, and you do want to look at them and say, I am not an animal. And we switch planes in Atlanta to a McDonnell Douglas MD-88, three seats down the port side, two down the starboard, and made the then got the 35-minute ride to Savannah. Landing at Savannah, I was picked up and driven an hour south to a little community called Darien, Georgia. It was a meeting of something called the Social Justice Institute. And what a magnificent body that is. A number of organizations working for social justice, immigrant rights, environmental justice, so to speak, all gathered together to get information, to go back and learn how to be better leaders, with information to pass on to both staff and volunteers alike to make the organizations better and stronger in their own right. And for 4 days, that's what we did. Darien, Georgia is south of Brunswick, Georgia, and not too far north of the Florida line. It has been a small fishing county. The meeting was being held in some vacated retail spaces at one of those ubiquitous outlet malls that spring up. And the story of this outlet mall was a double whammy. It had, when it opened, employed a large number of folks in one of the poorest counties of Georgia, McIntosh County, in various and sundry outlet stores, mid to low-level hotel chains sprang up around them. And the whole enticement for those businesses to come there was because the usual tax giveaway dodge was put in place. So as soon as the tax breaks wore off, they split. The companies did, the businesses. Add into that the economic crash. I think we can call it a crash. Yes, certainly a crash. And recession or depression, depending on your preference of words. And that outlet center was about 80% vacant. So we were meeting in some of the vacated spaces. And one of the local member groups, a magnificent social justice social service agency called McIntosh Seed, which stands for Sustainable Environment and Economic Development, hosted the group. And we discussed and learned on a number of topics. And there were representatives from groups in Mississippi, West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and did I mention Alabama? And it became pretty obvious, pretty quick, that black or white, we all had something in very much in common. Because everyone there was engaged in what may be fairly described as a life or death struggle for the members of their communities. School issues, immigrant rights issue, Florida was there. Environmental issues, as I said. And a tremendous bond of common cause was formed. And it was amazing to see the work being done by these other organizations. And it was inspiring as all get out. Now, McIntosh County, Georgia, sits on the coast of Georgia, coastal Georgia. And it is beautiful. Piney woods and what had been hardwood forests of live oak. Fishing communities, shrimpers, oystermen, crabs. And once again, the county found itself impoverished because once everything was taken from them, the money left, good luck, hail fellow well met, and goodbye. On Saturday, we came to the culmination of our understanding. On Saturday, we boarded a tour bus and drove from the outskirts of Darien, Georgia, to the coast, to the beginnings of the marshes and estuaries that lead outward to the Atlantic Ocean. For me, whose days and world is described by arcs of mountains surrounding me, so much flat land, was again a complete novelty, as were the 85 and 90 degree days in mid-October and that hot Georgia sun beating down upon my pink pate. Yeah, I got a little sunburn. Then again, I reach in the refrigerator and I get a little sunburn. But we took a ride out on that tour bus as far as it would take us to a ferry. And the ferry, in turn, led us out, and you can look it up on Google Earth, led us out to Sapelo Island, Georgia. S-A-P-E-L-O. Where there was taking place that day, the 17th Annual Cultural Day, hosted by a group called Psychars, the Sapelo Island Cultural and Revitalization Society. You see, Sapelo Island has a fascinating history. Up until the New World was quote-unquote discovered, you can imagine the shock and surprise of the native people, but we never lost it. Well, that's okay. White Europeans are here, and we'll take it from you now. Thank you. Sometime in the 16th century, in the 1500s, Franciscan monks bearing their hateful god and their diseases set up a monastery there. That was the beginning and the end of the native culture that had lived there. There's a shell mound ring that dates back literally thousands of years on Sapelo Island. And after that part of the countryside was wrested from the Spanish, well, in the 18th century, some rich white folks got the idea that the best thing they could do out there would be to go and steal them some Africans and come back and work the soil of those barrier islands on the coast of Georgia. And that they did. But they didn't just steal any Africans. They went stealing some particular Africans. Because there was an old, old, well-established rice agriculture long about where Sierra Leone is. Sierra Leone. And so that's where they went. That's where these white slavers went for their Africans, because among other things, They could grow rice like almost no one else on the planet. And they had a certain natural immunity to malaria. So these individuals from this magnificent culture on the African coast were brought to coastal Georgia and coastal Carolina. And they survived. They survived the mosquitoes. They survived the storms. And they proved to be incredibly self-sufficient and self-determined. And very much unlike even other slave cultures in other slave states. And they formed what is referred to now as the Geechee Gullah populations of that region. In South Carolina, the peoples are referred to as Gullah. In Georgia, they are referred to as Geechee. And what a magnificent culture it truly, truly is. They had their own animistic religion when they left Africa, and they brought it with them to America, where it received an overlay of titular Christianity. But more than old habits, old faiths die hard, and so they were hung on to and clung to, literally, through the centuries. They raised indigo, they raised Sea Island cotton, they raised rice and the staples of daily existence. Even though some would find it hard to explain, now, they continued with practices they had had in their native land, including burial practices. One sign at the festival we attended was titled Burials and Funeral Practices. And I'm going to read the dialect as it appeared on the sign, which I photographed. The sign said, just as languages blended, and they did, into a sort of Creole dialect of English and African words and maybe some French, some Spanish, some Native American terms, First Peoples. Just as languages blended, so did practices regarding burials and grave adornment. When funeral procession gets to the graveyard, they stops. I ain't know why they do it, but they stops at the gate, and they asks leave to come in. There ain't nobody at the gate, but they all acts just the same. They say, family, we come to put our brother away in the muddy dust. Please let us go through the gate. One of the first things that defines humanity, most anthropologists will tell you, is what we do with the dead. If you just stack them up like cordwood in the back of the cave and maybe, you know, munch on them once in a while, you're not human yet. It's when you start taking those who have gone on and putting them somewhere special and giving them special things to take with them that we begin to get all human-like. And so I read that sign. Well, there were more than a few occasions where tears came to my eyes. But we boarded that ferry, and we crossed over to Sapelo Island. And that sun was still strong, and it felt so good. By ferry is the only way to get to the island. There are no bridges. After the Civil War, the man who had originally put the plantations in, a man by the name of Spaulding, more or less gave up and moved on. And as a result of some federal action, the by then freed slaves were allotted ground on the island to work for themselves and own. It didn't last. By the early part of the 20th century, a man who was a famous automobile innovator and owner of the Hudson Motor Car Company purchased the old Spaulding plantation and began putting people to work, doing things like creating job creation, right? The timbering and maintaining business interests. He went bust in the Great Depression. We know how he voted because of his guest list. Herbert Hoover, Calvin Coolidge, Charles Lindbergh. Yeah. Tweren't no Democrat. But he went bust in the Great Depression, and that leads us to R.J. Reynolds. Yeah, that R.J. Reynolds. He purchased the plantation. And he began to look around, and he said, you know what? I am a rich man. I want it all. Or as much of it as I can get my hands on. And so he began wheeling and dealing with the locals who lived on that island and got them to swap him land for land. Ultimately, his goal was to consolidate all the black communities in one place and take the better land that they owned for himself, and he did this, creating a number of communities, the last one of which was what I visited, a little community called Hog Hammock. Might have started out as Hummock, a little, you know, rise in the topography of Hummock. And that leads us more or less to today. The state of Georgia bought the land from the R.J. Reynolds estate. And lo and behold, and not so much as a by your leave to the people who had worked it for generations and centuries, said, guess what? This here's a state park now. It's going to be a wildlife sanctuary. And so it is. Then the University of Georgia, again, without so much as a by your leave to the people who had worked the land for generations and yay centuries, said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take another chunk of the island, and we're going to create a marine estuarine research station. And all you people who lived here can just kiss our ass. And then, like on so many of the other sea islands of coastal Carolina and coastal Georgia, the developers came. They came to St. Simon's Island, and I heard that story on Friday night, and it makes blood come to your eyes when you think about it. St. Simon's Island was far too beautiful for ordinary human beings, especially ordinary human beings with dark skin, to just be sitting there living on. Why, goodness gracious, we could put up McMansions here and resort spas and restaurants that would serve meals with little three-pronged forks to use on the shrimp instead of folks just eating them with their fingers. And folks said, no. And these were largely old folks. And in some instances, not particularly well-educated. And they said, no, I don't reckon I want to sell. Some of them sold. For a pittance, of course. And the real estate developer said, well, okay, don't sell to me. That's fine. We've got enough land now that when we start building houses on it and those housing values go up, you won't be able to pay your taxes on your little old shack. And then we'll just take it from you. And that's what they did. And that's what some have tried to do on Sapelo Island. But Sapelo Island occupies a particularly special place because it is the last extant, functioning Gullah Geechee population anywhere along that coastline that runs from Wilmington, North Carolina, to the Florida line. The dispersal and the ethnic cleansing is almost complete. But it is not complete. And I was reminded, much to my joy, of that on Saturday. Lord, that whole time we were there, they fed us. Oh, they fed us. All manner of different rice dishes, tomatoes and okra and smoked sausage stewed together in a sort of gumbo of the kind of thing. Chicken salad like you never tasted chicken salad before. Potato salad with shrimp scattered through it, and seasonings the likes of which you can scarcely imagine. And it was delicious. I'm all worked up because I have to try to recreate some of it for my family here. Yellow rice with chicken. Red rice made with hog jowl. And all these magnificent foods were, of course, the product of the fact that the well-to-do and the well-heeled were eating literally high on the hog, while the folks in these communities got whatever their betters, you know, the folks in the big house, were too good to eat. Neck bones and pig's feet and heads and ribs and innards. And they turned those things into the kinds of things that folks now pay for as exquisite delicacies. And it was all on display Saturday on Sapelo Island. Didn't get to the coastline. They're not allowed to go to the coastline. They are completely landlocked and hemmed in. Didn't see the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, but what I did see. Those magnificent live oak trees arching over the community building where the singing and the preaching was going on. Those live oak trees and tall pine trees, every last one of them festooned with an absolute profusion of Spanish moss, and the smoke from barbecues rising up through those branches and coloring that Georgia sun. Something that no camera could ever capture. And the smells of those foods cooking, and the music, and the heritage, and the history, and the laughter. It was a magnificent reminder for me, coming from this blasted area, that whatever we have, the 1% want. The 1% are without a doubt the single most avaricious and, yes, jealous bunch you may ever see. They have all and more than you and I could ever begin to imagine. And yet it is not enough for them. For whatever they have, they want what we have, what little we have. And we rode around an old rattly school bus to get from the ferry to the hog hammock community. The windows open and the smell of salt air abundant in our faces. and I looked at one of my new friends, and I said, I can't figure the way the other side thinks. Because, my God, the island was beautiful. It's a big island. I said, I can't look out into that forest and say, you know what that needs? Taco Bell. Over there, can't you just see the Applebee's springing up? And down that way, the Fuddruckers. And right over there could be the golf course with the clubhouse. And people who talk with their teeth clenched yelling, four, darling, four! And going off to their hotel resort complex built hard by the graves of slaves who carved out that paradise. Whatever we want to keep for ourselves, whatever tiny little bit of heritage, of culture, according to them, we are not allowed to have. Because they want it all. That community rang with the sounds of drumming and the cadences of southern accents that were like music to my ears. Gospel singing, and I'm not talking about the Happy Goodman family and Dropkick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life. I'm talking about gospel singing that if you don't get up out of your seat, you're dead. Even me, sitting there with the toes start tapping and pretty soon the leg below the knee's moving and the next thing you know, it's just all over you. And hearing in that beautiful, beautiful music the what had to be the birth pangs of R&B. And even rock and roll itself. Joyous cries in song, in faith. I cut no faith any slack. But I'll tell you this much: there was so much more that was so much more genuine about this. And people walking around in the native dress and costuming of their forebears, not to mimic, but to honor the hard ways that those people determined not to be ruined, even though they had been stolen and enslaved, determined to survive no matter what. They lost their school on Sapelo Island in 1978, and since then the few remaining children have to ride a ferry 25 minutes both ways to the mainland and then get on a bus to go to school. But they are determined to hang on to their cultural lifeways. And yeah, the food. Dear God, the food. I tried to eat a little bit of everything for a long time, because I don't know when I'll ever eat it again. Shrimp and grits. And I don't mean any of that stuff comes in a box with Barbara Bush's picture on it either, Quaker my ass. No, these were grits, rich and flavorful, with that beautiful, beautiful sauce and shrimp laid over. And that red rice and the yellow rice. And yeah, the best macaroni and cheese I think I've eaten in several years. And I just went, because all of these little vendors were from various and sundry local churches, and the thousand people who were there were mostly the scattered offspring of that community. When we first got there, I was walking around, just, you know, sort of looking around, all wide-eyed at everything, trying to drink it all in, trying to just absolutely drill it down to the very center of my being so that I would never forget it. I'd give anything to go back next year. And all of a sudden I heard a voice saying, "Hey! Hey!" I looked around. There's a fellow over there pointing at me. "Yeah, you." And I recognized him all of a sudden, because while we were waiting for our bags in Savannah to come off the plane, he and I had stood together. He was wearing a University of Connecticut jersey, and you know that's kind of a Big East thing. And I recognized a fellow member of the Big East and struck up a conversation. He was visiting from New York way. He lives in New York City. And I recognized him and said, "What are you doing here?" And I just grinned real big because, you know, that's just the kind of little magic that happens. And I said, "Well, I'm here with a group working on social justice issues, and this is our field trip." I said, "How about you?" He said, "I was raised here." He said, "I was born in New York City, but my mama was from here, and she sent me down here to live with my grandmama for the first 5 years of my life. And so I come down this time every year just to make sure everything's still here and see my family." And he spread his arms wide and said, "This is all my family." And that was another one of those moments where there's a little catch in your throat. And you think, "Yes, yes." He said, "I work as a photographer in New York, but down here, I'm just Bob." And I said, "I'm just Bob, too." And so he said, "Eat yet?" I said, "No, I've been looking around." He said, "Come with me." He said, "I'll take you to my friend George." And George was over there battering and frying little whole fish. Turned out it was whiting. And I got introduced to George and got in line there and got me some shrimp, got me his shrimp and grits and his fried whiting, and I was off and running. And it was beautiful. Yeah, shrimp and grits, fried whiting, and the music playing in the background the whole time. Later on, it was the ribs and the red rice and the yellow rice. And yeah, the mac and cheese. Took a little breather. Went over and got me a couple of pig's feet. They were real tasty. Took another little breather. Got after the neck bones. And they were awesome. Another little breather and went after the chitlins, and they were just yummy. And I mean ate and ate and ate and ate. It was all just... The only thing I didn't get to, I wore down before I got to the smoked mullet, and I regret that because I bet you it was fantastic. And finished it all off with a slice of sweet potato pie, and I've eaten some sweet potato pie. The likes of nothing I'd ever had. Oh, it was beautiful. The surroundings were beautiful. The music was magnificent. The cultural demonstrations were just stunning. It was beautiful. Agnes had told me, she said, "I don't want anything fancy, but I sure would like it if you'd bring me some seashells." Well, we didn't get anywhere near the seashore, so no seashells from the seashore. But it turned out there was an artisan there who had made earrings from little shells. So I got those for Agnes. Cell service wasn't real good out on the island. So we had talked right before I got aboard the ferry, and she said, "I want a dolphin to show itself to you. I want you to see a dolphin for me." How I wish Agnes could travel with me on these things. I do. I miss her like crazy. And so all the way out, I was in the bow of the ferry looking for dolphins. And all the way back. And almost back to the dock, I said, "All right, fellas, you know how she is." And I had the video camera running, and just about then, a dolphin surfaced just a couple of points off the port bow. And I caught it and said, "Well, she got her dolphin." Because whenever Agnes gets anywhere near the sea, she calls the dolphins. That's pretty powerful that she can sit on a mountaintop in West Virginia and they can hear her even from there. What a trip it was. Makes me and you know, in my misspent youth, I had spent time, I'd played golf at Harbortown, hung out on Myrtle Beach. And it made me think back to the rightness and wrongness of that sort of thing. What right have we to displace people? I mean, this is the 21st century now. We are not operating in colonialist 18th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century mindsets. And yet here in the 21st century, they are the power people, the money people, the green people. You know, green like in money. Have still not figured out that the mere acquisition and possession of money does not convey upon them a greater right. To where we live than what we have. David in Tennessee writing in, he says, Sea Island culture. For generations, those hardy folks had specialized in soups and stews back home, both of generous complexity. So 'twere no big thing to incorporate some Christianity in amongst their existing African rites and practices once they were here. And it's the truth. I got to actually hear some of the Gullah dialect. I was later told it had been watered down so we could actually understand some of it. And it was beautiful. It was like music. There's another community called Harris Neck. It has their own tragic story, only this one's mid-20th century. With U-boats, German U-boats off the coast of Georgia and South Carolina blowing the hell out of transport ships, the federal government came to an African community on Harris Neck and said, "We need your island. We're going to build an airstrip and an airbase so that we can keep the U-boat packs at bay." And this is among perhaps the most sad stories. Because those people said, "What? Our government needs where we live so that we can beat the Germans and the Japanese?" And they didn't even think twice about it. And the federal government said, "You got 2 weeks to get out." And they got out in those 2 weeks, and everything, their entire community, was bulldozed to the ground. And the federal government never built the air base. And the federal government had promised these members of this community that the island, the land, would be returned to them upon the close of the cessation of hostilities. Instead, when the war was over, the federal government gave it to the state of Georgia, who turned it into another game preserve. And to this day, they are struggling to get their land back. What amazing people I met. And what a tremendous organization the Social Justice Institute was. And these are all stories, whether they're in Appalachia or coastal Georgia or the Delta of Mississippi. These are all stories of oppression and grief. And the only thing we have in common is the goodwill that we bring to the struggle and our determination to say no in the face of the most profound power and to refuse to go quietly. So that's where I went. That's where I was gone to. And like I said, if you can ever get down there for the cultural day, I highly recommend it. You will not leave that island without being first changed. No, you will not. Again, the name of the group that puts on the cultural day, the Sapelo Island Cultural and Revitalization Society, SICARS. And these cultures are so worth preserving because far more than any monument, far greater than any ambition of a rich man, these are the communities and cultures that are America. And by the way, if you want to get just one little picture of what it was like, if you go to headonradionetwork.com, the show post is there. And News Ninja Susan has kindly made it possible for one of those large format photos to be shown on the website. What you'll see is a view of the performance stage and the people gathered there. Such things are transformative. Even to someone like me, who is as far outside that culture as one human being can get. And yet, I was made as welcome as family. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So that's where we begin this evening. If I can figure out a way to do it, I'll try to transfer some of that music off my phone and play it for you at some point. Just one of the songs, that's all. Wow. So this is Monday, and this is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We'll open the phone lines for your Moran Monday nominations, and you are welcome to make them. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Although, truth be told, whilst I was down there, I was transformed into Bobby Kincaid. And you know what? Sounded just fine. Just fine. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Sink into the western sky. And simultaneously the moon began to rise on the other side of the river with its own glorious shade of red, coming up out of the trees like a russet firebird. The sun and the moon seemed to acknowledge each other, and they moved in both apposition and concordance in a breathtaking dance of light across the oaks and the palms. My father watched it, and I thought he would cry again. He had returned to sea, and his heart was a low country heart. such good friends to me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, so we're a couple of minutes early. That's okay. I'm going to try something here. I don't know if it'll work or not. It would be far better if I downloaded this and then, or uploaded it and then dealt with it, but you don't want to know. I'm going to try to play this audio and see if it translates across the microphone. Because it was just so special. Just got a note in from Kate out on the front range. Hadn't heard from Kate in a while. I was beginning to fret. She said, the menu makes my mouth water. The language makes my eyes water. Memories of the music make my muscles want to move. Oh, how I love that culture. I've had so many Geechee friends. Thank you for your postcard from the road. You are blessed. And she says, of course the redhead called the Dolphins. Signed, Kate. Missing the South. Missing the South. So, let me see. Let me just see if I can get this across. I don't know that music would come across, but like I said, we had a little spoken word demonstration of the dialect, and it was, in fact, musical. And if it'll come across, it's worth hearing. Stand by here. And, of course...
I'm gonna be a
Well, I think it came across. Make little hairs stand up on the back of your neck, it would. And did. Magic. Magic. And it's the same kind of magic if you're listening to stories on the front porch here in Appalachia or down in the deep south or Kentucky or Tennessee. I was reminded of one thing, and that is this. We all talk about how we want to change America. We want to make America, the United States, a better place. Tell you a little secret. The change that will make America a better place, and I know this might seem counterintuitive, what with Occupy Wall Street and everything, but the change that will make America a better place will find its fullest voice in the South. Because that place is so filled with people who have been stepped on, stomped on, rolled over, killed, run off, that when they finally find their voice, when we finally find our voice, nothing will stop it. Look at all the pasty-faced, doughy white men in the House of Representatives representing places like Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, North and South Carolina. Well, they're certainly not the numbers they have in the Congress is certainly not representative of the actual demographic makeup of the South. And when that power finally comes together, going to roll over a lot. We are 11 years away from a point in this country where the youth of this country will be made up of more minority peoples than white people. We are 33 years away from a day when the entire population of the United States of America will be comprised more of minority peoples than white peoples. That scares some white folks water-boweled. Doesn't faze me and it doesn't faze you. Because we're all just folks. It scares the money people snickering over their lobster lunches in the high-rise boardrooms and whatnot above Wall Street. It scares them water-boweled. They can look, and the same goes for the teabaggers. They can look 33 years out. And they can see the end of all the power that they have amassed unto themselves to this day. And with that kind of fright and fear and terror, groundless, baseless terror, motivating them, there is no end to what they will do. And do not be surprised in the long run when you see what they do. Like I said, the lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Cossack, is that you, man?
Tis I.
Okay, yeah, he must have been across the room there.
Yes, I would.
But you're back now.
I are back.
Good to hear from you. It's been a while. How are you?
Struggling on. Little by little. But glad to hear your trip was good, except for the actual tripping.
Well, it's impossible to enjoy flying in this country anymore, Cossack.
Yeah.
And that's not just because there's too much of me and too little of the plane. I mean, my kids are uncomfortable in airplanes.
I remember the good old days when a trip by plane was something special. Then again, I remember flying on 707s, too.
Right, and you know, now it's just a matter of trying to cram the plane full enough to get enough fares to pay for the gas.
Right. And, yeah, I remember, you know, like that series, Can-Am. I remember that. I flew Pan Am back then. Back in the 60s.
Now the 60s are gone, and so is Pan Am.
Yeah. TWA, Pan Am, things we thought would never leave.
Yeah. Of course, now I guess what, ABC has a series about Pan Am flight attendants?
Right.
Because they're trying to find somewhere else that they can sort of glom onto the success of, what, I guess, Mad Men?
Yeah. Here's the good old days, and this is what they were like.
Only they weren't.
Well, not for a lot of people, no. Kind of sucked for a lot of people.
A lot, yeah.
And, yeah, I wanted to bring up the entire Occupy thing.
Okay.
Having feelings of 1848 there, are we?
Elaborate, please.
Well, you remember the revolutions that tore across Europe in 1848. They were popping up all over the place.
Yep.
Yeah. It's starting to smell that way over here.
Well, it has yet to be determined whether or what kind of impact this will have. It was mid to late last week, I think, when the New York Times had an article, Cossack, that sort of gave a peep behind the curtain of the sanctum sanctorum of Wall Street's inner workings, in which the banksters at the top of the food chain talked with considerable derision and snickered up their sleeves at the Occupy Wall Street movement. And it's still going on. I mean, I got one of those nasty little right-wing interview pitches earlier today.
Uh-huh.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. And what the title of the pitch was. It's right down here. Won't take me but a minute. Oh, there it is. Are the young and jobless too preoccupied with Occupy Wall Street to find a job?
If there were a job out there.
And so they're pitching me a guest who says, the social media and networking expert Melissa G. Wilson, author of Graduate to LinkedIn. And she says, in this day and age, there's a whole new way to get to them, and not knowing it will keep you occupying Wall Street instead of a job. What social media networking strategy don't people know about? Is there a skill set you have to learn to successfully network? How do people give up too soon while developing their network? How long do job seekers have to sweat it out before seeing results? You know, these things roll in. Let's see. Yeah, this was at 11 o'clock. Put me off my lunch is what it did.
I can understand that.
Meanwhile, they acknowledge in this stupid pitch, Cossack, that the Associated Press reports that the unemployment rate for young adults is the highest it's been since World War II. And nearly one in five, according to the latest census data, runs the risk of living in poverty. Poverty.
Yeah. Especially after they're done paying off their student loans.
Well, right. I mean, and then, of course, there is the debt forgiveness movement, which is a brilliant call.
Yeah. Well, and I heard some right-winger go waxing rhapsodic about that. That, see, the main call you get from all these Occupy places is to forgive student loans. If these kids just hunkered down, I'm just, Jesus. Please hit me over the back of the head.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's like...
And it is more. It is more Ann Monday, so I guess that's our first nominee.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if there were jobs out there that people could get, I mean, remember that they entice everybody in into college with these dreams of, you know, you'll get a decent job, you'll be making, you know, a six-figure salary. Bullshit. You know. Not unless you're on Wall Street, then you get paid for being incompetent.
Or just criminal.
Well, that too. I think more of them are criminal than incompetent. But criminally incompetent works just as well.
This is, well, they're, Cossack, they are completely, you know, the 1% are completely disconnected from reality.
Yeah.
You know, these are the people who want to go down and run people out of their homes so that they can put up a Taco Bell. Because sure. What St. Simon's Island really needs is a freaking Pizza Hut. Ugh.
No, I remember being dispossessed for a Walmart, so, you know, everybody was given the message, move, or else. We're just going to come in and bulldoze the whole damn place, whether you're there, in there or not.
Jeebus, I know.
You know?
Well, remember, I live in a community where Walmart bulldozed a Civil War battlefield.
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, we have so many of them.
And of course, the 1% complain about their taxes, but when higher taxes result in people being dispossessed from their homes, oh, those are good taxes.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, this ludicrous 999 thing. One place where I agree with Bachman, turn it upside down, you got it right.
Yeah, it's the mark of the beast.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's stuck on stupid, and it's he's just trying to recycle his pizza pricing.
Yeah, but he's not a stupid man. That's the whole thing. Or at least one would be.
Oh, no, wait just a minute. I'm going to disagree with you. Genius or making lots of money is not a function of genius.
No.
It is a function of dedicating your life to making lots of money. You know, human lives, being the finite span that they are, don't leave a lot of room for so-called Renaissance people. We find ourselves having to specialize whether we want to or not. And we make decisions about, and sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, Cossack. But for someone who makes the conscious decision that the thing that matters most in their world is to make lots and lots and lots of money,
mm-hmm.
They'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's selling greasy, toxic, artery-hardening pizza, or, pick one. But other people make other choices. I will never have lots and lots of money, because I just can't make it a priority. Because there's a lot of other neat stuff about life than, I would say by a vast percentage, the people with lots and lots and lots of money, what do they get out of it? They sit around and they watch their money grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they can vacation in the Hamptons or maybe go and dispossess some islander off the coast of Georgia or South Carolina. And they can sit there and say, Well, my gracious, this certainly is a lovely view of the coastline, isn't it? Bring me another scotch.
But they have no
appreciation for where they are or what. No.
They don't care.
And me, I just absolutely geek on this stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they could have left me on the island for another couple of days, and you know, maybe just find somebody friendly to walk me around, would you? I just want to see more. I mean, there are ruins there that go back a couple of hundred years. Of course, the folks who actually built them and the culture that created them aren't allowed to get anywhere near them.
Well, that's typical.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing. You have a family that you care about. You want to spend time with them. These people that we're talking about, money is more important than family. Money is more important than anything. Literally, it is more important than anything. And that
comes at a profound cost to the rest of a well-rounded life.
Yeah, like I said, you'll sell out your family. You'll sell out your health. They told you to drown your mother to make a few hundred thousand bucks. You'd do it. Basically, what it comes down to.
Indeed.
Yeah, and they don't care. They don't care.
Well, no, they do care. They care enough to want it all.
Yeah. I don't want much.
And the thing is, it's the desire of those who are trying to replace a hollow place inside their own beings with outward trappings of their wealth. I suggest a quick reading of Richard Corey, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jack in Shreveport just wrote in, and he says, Cain's no genius. There's no way that Herman Cain has any kind of smarts. The dude has given us plenty of evidence that he doesn't. I don't get how he could have run Godfather's Pizza at all. Well, when it's time for me to need to know who the president of Uzbekistan is, well, I'll find out. Jesus!
Yeah, it's not important for me.
You gotta wonder what kind of campaign handlers he's got. Well, that reminds me, I had a request for my songify of Uzbekistan. And since I successfully played a little audio over the mic that way, I may have to try this too. But it's awfully good to hear from you, and you know, because we do, we begin to worry after a while.
It's been a trying period, unfortunately.
Sorry to hear it, brother. Well, as you can, don't be a stranger, and make sure we know that everything's all right. All right.
I'm gonna try.
All right, you take care, Cossack. Good to talk to you, brother.
All right, you too, Bob. Take care.
Bye now. 22 minutes past the hour on this Monday edition of The Horn. Let me see, before we go to the next call, assuming that you're there and lines are open, let's see if we can play Herb Cain and the Uzbekistan song via Songify, which is just a really fun little app on the, I don't know if it's out there for Android, but it's a fun little app on my phone.
And they always started the car. And when they asked me who's the president,
Yeah, that's Herb Cain and Becky Stan. Yeah, John, I'm trying with limited or no success to play audio via a mic speaker. Just sort of on the fly, you'll have that. Not the best way, but it's a pain in the... I don't have the phone set up to sync with this computer because this computer has enough problems as it is. You know what I mean? So enough of that. Let's try to go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't expect to get on. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, I'm glad you are. Who have I got?
This is Carol, spelled like C-A-R-R-O-L-L.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm awfully glad you got through.
Could I, before I go any further, for some reason I can't find your snail mail address. Could you give it to me real quick?
Sure. BobKincaid@gmail.com.
Well, I looked on the computer. I mean to, so I could mail you a...
Oh, snail mail. Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's there at headonradionetwork.com. There's a little tab called Contribute. But it, I'm sorry, I mixed up snail mail with email. It's 1038.
Okay.
And everybody else can write this down, too. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive.
Eisenhower Drive, okay.
PMB.
PMB.
318.
318.
Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y.
B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, okay.
WV.
WV.
25801.
Okay, Eisenhower Drive, and then the PMB 318.
Yeah, that stands for personal mailbox.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. Well, yeah, you know, I just don't like PayPal, but I've been downloading your show, and I want to go ahead and shoot you a check now and then.
Well, that would be awfully nice, and we do appreciate it, believe me.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed your callers. I found your show through listening. I've been listening to Mike Malloy for a long time. And he turned me on to your program, and, you know, it's two very different programs, you know, along the same lines, but yours is, it's a lot more input from people, and I find that pretty interesting. You've got some callers that I definitely identify with. But, you know, what I, you know, the past 10 years, what they've kind of done to me personally, for instance, in 2004, I stopped watching TV altogether. You know, I just got to the point where I really couldn't take any more. And after the so-called re-election of George Bush, I kind of said that's it. So ever since then, I've just been getting all of my information off shows like yours, Malloy, things like that, and off the Internet. And I found that I'm really not missing anything. And I'm saving a little money.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Carol... there is less content in the for-profit media, by and large, than most of what happens here, or Malloy, or my colleague and good friend Rick Smith, and a number of others, because we try to make it information dense with enough context for it to begin to make some sense. You know, the way the for-profit media has behaved with regard to Occupy Wall Street, I think, is the classic case in point. To the point that a CNBC of all places, a CNBC correspondent upbraided Joe Scarborough for his persistent dismissive attitude toward it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I'm at work, and I'm a dealer in I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada, and there's TVs in the break room in the cafeteria, and you know, I'll be in there 20 minutes at a time, and what little bit I might see of that, it just drives me so nuts that it's just unbelievable. I can't see how anybody can stand watching it. If it weren't for you guys playing me some clips. You know, I don't see how anybody can stand to watch it anymore without their blood pressure just going sky high.
You know, I wake up pretty early in the morning because the kids have to be up at 5 and on the bus at 6. So that frequently leaves me watching a little bit of for-profit media in the form of Morning Joe. And it does. It raises your blood pressure. It ruins your dinner. It ruins your breakfast, what have you. Because if you're awake enough in the nightmare to realize what a raft of lies is being put out, and you know, these aren't falsehoods or mistruths or half-truths, they're damn lies.
Well, and you know, on your show, I believe it was yesterday, I heard that the Obama administration has gone ahead and signed off on allowing offshore oil drilling off the coast of Alaska.
And yes.
Somebody who's been, I'm 57 years old, and for somebody who's been into protecting the environment for a lot of decades, and someone who's voted for the Democrat for president all my life, I'm really wondering what I'm going to do in this election. You know, here in Nevada, I said I wouldn't vote for Harry Reid again. But then when Sharon Angel came up and just flat out said, I would vote to get rid of Social Security right now.
Kind of put you in a bind, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I ended up voting for Harry Reid. And to be honest with you, it was just a selfish reason, the Social Security thing. You know, even though he's weak, I believe he does believe in Social Security. And in his own way, I think he does fight for it. But, you know, getting back to Obama, you know, I'm wondering what some of your other callers are going to do when this election comes up. Because for me, with all Obama has not done, I mean, to allow oil drilling off the coast of Alaska, I mean, that is like a line in the sand to me.
But there's been a lot of those lines in the sand, Carol. Just recently, the brilliant law firm Earth Justice filed a lawsuit against the EPA for backing down on the new ozone rules that would have saved, you know, 12,000 lives a year.
I remember you saying that.
And it was done because President Obama felt like, I guess that the right wing would call him some more nasty names and he doesn't like it or he's afraid of it or something. It's disgusting. Or the business community said, well, you know, this uncertainty about the air, you know, the only uncertainty about air is how long you can go without it. And trust me, it's a question of seconds, not days.
Well, let me ask you this. Obama, you know, a lot of people on the liberal or left side, you know, we've been trying to figure out, is he just weak? Has he been threatened? Or
is this the guy he always set out to be?
Well, and not only that, but is he just a wolf in sheep's clothing? I mean, is he really just a Republican? Were we all set up by having this guy come up and say the things he did? Was it just a setup?
Yeah, and that, I guess, is the million-dollar question. You know, I had another one of those little kick-the-furniture moments when I saw the news story come across that, lo and behold, this Congress that can't seem to agree on what time lunch is, let alone agree on some way to put America back to work, that by God, all of that just sort of disappeared, and it was hail fellow well met and joyous reunion when it came to these god-awful free trade deals. Three of them.
I know.
Done in one fell swoop. And suddenly the Democrats liked the Republicans, and the Republicans liked the Democrats, and the House passed it, and the Senate passed it, and Obama was all happy?
Mm-hmm.
And as has been noted, the South Korea deal all by itself is going to cost 159,000 American jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just never ends with this. You know, I'll give you a little tidbit. When I was first in college in the early 70s, I volunteered for about 4 or 5 months, a guy running for Congress opposing none other than Ron Paul, in his first race down in Texas. And the guy I worked for was a guy named Bob Gamage, and he ended up winning on an extremely close race, and then 2 years later, he lost to Ron Paul. But I actually met Ron Paul back then at campaign things and little debates and everything like that. And, you know, I obviously would never vote for him for president for all the reasons we all talk about. But I have to admit that the guy, he really hasn't changed his tune in all these decades. And in a way, I kind of respect that when I look at some of the politicians out there. And again, I would never vote for him, but it just seems funny to me when I might see him or hear his voice in the debate clips. And I remember talking to him way back then, and he sounds exactly the same. It's kind of funny.
Well, and you know, I think somebody described him on the program last week as, you know, Ron Paul is like a stopped clock. He's right twice a day, no matter what.
Yeah.
And these, you know, these hardcore, you know, Austrian school libertarians who want everybody to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, but don't want anybody to have boots but themselves.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's obnoxious. It's hateful. It doesn't work.
Oh well, totally. Again, you know, I don't believe in really what he's saying. I just think that when I see someone like, you know, Barack Obama, who, in my opinion, has not stood up one time for anything he said, especially, you know, when he said, "Oh, I put on a pair of comfortable shoes and walk a picket line if union people were attacked or whatever." He certainly didn't do that in Wisconsin.
No.
And you know, I don't know. You know, it's as a Democrat, I'd be interested in the days and weeks to come when I'm listening to your show, what some of the other callers are kind of thinking on as the election comes closer, what they're going to do, who they're going to vote for.
And you know, there's a wide spectrum of opinion here in the Horn family, Carol, because it goes from people who kind of, well, you know, my personal take on it is that I'm at least awake enough to realize that I'm, you know, that when we go to the polls, we're dealing with empire. And so what we're doing is choosing an imperial administrator. And like, for instance, 2008 was a choice between, let me back up. 2000 was a choice between Caligula and Caesar Augustus. We got Caligula. We got Caligula again in 2004. In 2008, we'd had enough of Caligula, and we wanted somebody who would be at least stable, so we went with, you know, the Vespasian type. And again, in 2012, we're going to have a choice between some nutbag and a guy who is a part of the inside of the corporate community who thinks that they have the best ideas. And that's how imperial administrators behave. Now, that's me. On the other hand, there's a lot of people out there, and I'll be hearing from them in my email just about any minute now, Carol, saying, "I would not vote for Barack Obama if he was the last human being on the planet. I've had it. I'm done." And I understand that. I understand that, and I don't, you know, and I'm not going to criticize somebody for it. But I just,
well, you
but,
know,
but
yeah,
I
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can't, for the life of me, and I've sat and tried real hard. But for the life of me, I can't adopt the burn, baby, burn approach to this country. The idea that, well, let's just let the Republicans have it, let's let them do their damnedest, and maybe from the ashes we will raise up something worth saving. Because those ashes, Carol, are going to be composed of us. We're going to be the ashes.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, I personally have never had children, so... But I know that people who do, and I'm not saying I won't end up voting for Obama. It's just when I think about all the things he has done that is completely, that he's done stuff that, and not done stuff that, that's the reason I would never vote for a Republican. And I'm scratching my head saying, I'm going to vote for a guy who let BP get away with it. I'm going to vote for a guy who opened up the pristine waters of Alaska to oil drilling. you know, and on and on and on, and it drives you nuts.
Yeah, and you know, the Alaska thing is particularly galling because if we consider the piss poor response that was had to the BP disaster, and it was, and it is still taking its toll on the Gulf Coast, no matter how many happy stories are told.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who runs the entire Coast Guard of the United States testifies before Congress that if something like that happens offshore of Alaska, that there is absolutely nothing up there to counter it with. In other words, all the stuff that amounted to that piss-poor response to the BP disaster, even that isn't present up there. So a BP disaster off the coast of Alaska, we can't even contemplate the hell and horror of it.
Well, you know, exactly. And you know, every place that they drill for oil, there's accidents. I mean, there's no exception, period. None. So we know what's going to happen. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I don't want everything to just be destroyed. I don't want it to happen. But on the other hand, I'm saying, am I really doing the right thing if I ignore it? I just wish somebody would get in a primary or challenge Obama. You know, I just wish someone would do it. But obviously, it's not going to happen.
And, you know, I mentioned this a week or so ago. I do have my misgivings about the amount of time that we spend on the presidential election and the amount of, I don't know, call it spiritual energy that goes into it. Because in both the long and the short run, the makeup of Congress, it is much easier to affect a congressional election if people in that district want to affect it. And unseating an incumbent is a booger, and we understand that, but it can be done. But these 51 to 49, 52 to 48, 53 to 47 presidential elections, they can be stolen at the bat of an eyelash, and we've got 2000 and 2004 to prove it. You know, there's an argument that the 2008 margins should have been higher than what they were, but because of video game voting, they weren't.
Well, and that's the other thing. It almost makes you wonder if, at this point, especially presidential, all these damned elections aren't rigged anyway. You know, I mean, I don't even think the Republicans wanted to win in 2008.
And I don't know if they want to win in 2012. If they wanted to win in 2012, they'd doggone well be running Jeb Bush.
I totally agree with you on that. I think that they just, you know, why, you know, some on the left, I think they were right. It was like, you know, just give it to the Democrats, and then all the dumbasses who watch Fox News and listen to right-wing radio have someone to blame.
Yeah,
you know.
And it's great for their ratings. And by the same, you know, again, we were talking about the free trade agreements. Look, if that Republican House and that ostensibly Democratic Senate find something they can agree on, and it puts the wood to us, well, they don't have any problems. That whole vote showed what a sham and charade the gridlock actually is. They just have to have something that means a lot to both of them. And they all apparently agreed that screwing upwards of 200,000 more Americans out of their jobs was something they were down with.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, talking about jobs, I mean, I guess I'm still one of the lucky ones, although my income here is down a little over 40% from 4 years ago. And, you know, I mean, again, there's a lot of people without jobs, and I know a lot of people, you know, who have kids, and they're really struggling. So I guess I'm lucky at this point. I still have a job. Of course, at 57, I have to hang on to it, because if I lose it, I'm in big trouble. But I don't know. I don't want to keep you too long, but I'm definitely going to start dropping a check in the mail to you, because I certainly want to see your show and all these shows stay on the air, because without them, I don't know what we'd even go to at that point, you know.
Well, that is high praise, especially to be considered by you among other people that I, like Malloy, that I consider to be an honest-to-God great and Yeah, hell, I think Malloy is probably one of the best Americans that are out there right now, because he's an American. He's an American with a fully functioning conscience.
Well, that's true, you know, and but I think that, you know, between your show and Malloy, and I even try to pick up Sam Cedars, and each one of you have, you know, your own personality, your own take, and your shows are different, so that while you might be preaching along the same lines, you know, it's definitely some variety. And what I found, like I say, between downloading these programs, you know, on an iPod, I don't miss TV. And what I would suggest would be to anybody, just cancel your damn cable. The only cable I have is to my computer. And I haven't missed it. I haven't missed TV at all myself. I used to be an athlete. I used to watch sports years and years ago. I don't even do that anymore. And I know you do. But, you know, I kind of burned myself.
Well, they're trying to run me away from that, too. You know, now that my beloved Mountaineers have to bow down or do some sort of obsequy in front of a lump of coal before every game, they're shoving me pretty hard. It's kind of like the industrial food, what'll we call it, the culinary industrial complex. Every time I read another horror story about some meatpacking plant or see some story about poison cantaloupes, it's like I'm being shoved a little bit more toward just letting the beard grow and getting a pair of overalls and turning everything around this house into garden and hope that I've got enough to get us fed for a year just to keep from getting poisoned.
Oh, I know. I know that. I actually really like cantaloupe, and ever since those stories, I haven't touched it once. But hey, I really appreciate your time, and I want to let you get to other callers and just continue what you're doing, man.
Well, thank you, Carol, and thank you for being living proof that being a first-time caller is not a terrifying experience.
Okay, thanks, man.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Carol calling from Vegas, first-time caller. Really? You know, I don't have a little bell or anything or a coffee cup to send out or whatnot, but first-time callers are always more than welcome. And if you're nervous or scared, you know, they did a survey at one point in time that said the number two fear of the vast majority of human beings is death. Number two. Number one was speaking in public. So if we can be some small part of helping people over that hump. Because you know what? If you can call this program and carry on a conversation, you can carry on a conversation in the line at the grocery store. And that's where the change begins to come about. I was the hotel room I was staying in down in Georgia, and I knew where I was. I was behind the cornbread curtain, baby. And I'm not going to run away. You know, somebody was out front of the hotel talking about, you know, how the jobs had all gone away there in McIntosh County, Georgia. And I just said, well, you know, we're in Georgia. Look who they vote for. The jobs are gone because the Republicans are willing to keep millions of Americans out of a job to put one man out of his. Trust me, the look on the face, I mean, I guess it would be like being in 1970 Moscow and talking about Brezhnev being an asshole. It, roughly similar. Only I wasn't sent off to the gulag. I got to go to this really cool island. Let's keep things going. You know, phone lines are open. First-time callers, frequent callers. Callers of all stripe and all location. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333. It's about 13 minutes before the hour. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Hey, I was good hearing from Carol. I like that. Yeah, I mean, he's in the right place if he doesn't watch TV, you know?
Free them, you know, free your mind.
That's right.
Your
it
butt,
I mean,
your butt will follow.
Yeah, you free, you know, you don't have to sit there. You know, you take what, you know, make it a salad bar. You take the information you want, you know. You wind up usually putting more on your plate, you know, but it's information, so there's not a lot of calories there. And the more you got, the better the better physique you have up there in that brain compartment.
True, true, true.
Now, Now, real quick, you know, I just got to say, you know, when it comes time to vote, I sure hope everyone's voting for Obama. President Perry.
Yeah, I know. That really doesn't rattle around my skull, Will.
President Romney.
President Kane.
Seriously?
President Pizza.
Kane? President Kane? Kane? What? What?
But then that, but President Kane would make for some really cool the martial music, graphics on CNN and stuff. If ever a Democrat spoke out against him, they'd call it the Kane Mutiny.
No, we don't need Herman Cain. We all know that. You know, people like, for real, honestly, seriously. Jimmy Carter's first term, it didn't go so hot. And Democrats, what did they do?
They ran off and voted for that greasy-headed old B-movie actor.
And now look at where we are. Now, who's going to argue as of now in terms of hindsight? For real, how can you argue that Jimmy Carter doesn't deserve at least a second term?
No one in their right mind, but that lets a lot of people out because, you know, Ronald Reagan defeated and destroyed communism and the Soviet Union and told them to tear down that wall. Ronald Reagan saved America and made America great again. You've heard it, Albert. Don't tell me you haven't.
No, but that's an easy thing to smash. That's a very easy thing to smash. So I'm not, you know, they can say that all day long. Because we should really have a discussion about Ronald Reagan. It'd be a lovely thing. You know,
we could talk about places like El Salvador.
Yeah, we could talk about El Salvador. Everything. Iran-Contra. Enough said. I mean, if you put what happened during the Iran-Contra with the money, and then superimpose it upon what happened in drugs in this country, you know exactly what happened. Period. End of story. And if we're going to be voting for, you know, an imperator, I mean, Obama, president, not sure, deserves another shot. At the very least, after everything the Bush administration did. You know, like, yes, I know it's not perfect. Trust me, I stay up till the wee hours with my stomach clenched in pain over these things. I'm right there with everyone else. But we're in the foxhole, folks. Here we are, all in there. I'm looking down the line, left and right. Here we all are, the whole horror family, all the people on this cutting edge of consciousness. We are not voting for President, not sure. We are voting for him. There is no choice. We can't have another two terms of Republicans. And you know, I was one, I've had that thought experiment. Man, we really could have used a third Bush term. We really could have. That would have been it for them. That would have been kaput. There have been no more Republicans ever in total history. But that's not what happened.
Because all of this would have happened on his watch, right? Because it was going to happen no matter who came into the White House in January of 2009. It was coming.
Oh, and they knew it. There's no doubt in my mind they knew it. That was part of the plan. And this whole thing has been part of the plan. This is their whole deal. Of course it's part of their plan. This is the plan. The plan is to make government so obese, so homestuck, so full, and you know, the house just full to the brim with hoarder crap. Just they can't move. They're too fat. We're too this, too that. And now they're going to take us to the bathtub, where they'll bring the bathtub to us. Because all we need is a bucket, right? Get a bucket and a bag, and there we go, and a hose, and that's it. And that's what they want to do. And they want. What are they going after? You know, like they talk about, we need jobs, we need this, we got a deficit, let's kill Social Security. What? What? What are you talking about? Oh, we need jobs, let's get rid of unions.
Yeah, speaking of getting rid of unions, you're going to love this little moment, Albert. One of our favorite not running for president guys, he would have been such a delight to follow on the campaign trail. Former Arkansas governor and preacher and Fox News host Mike Huckabee.
Oh God!
You got a minute or so for a little sound clip?
All right, I'm gonna try to release this aneurysm in my mind.
Right. Yeah. Sit down. Strap in.
Yeah.
This is precious.
Mm-hmm. I suggest you do three things for the election. One. that you personally commit to vote. I know that seems like, well, of course I'm going to vote. I never assume people are going to vote just because they chose eating pancakes. If I had a choice between eating pancakes and standing in line to vote, I'd rather eat a pancake myself, I'll be honest with you. But you got to vote, because it doesn't do any good to be upset about something if we don't vote. So vote. Number two, don't vote alone. Vote with someone, family, friends, relatives, people you work with. Make a list. Make a list of 10 family members, 10 friends, 10 neighbors, 10 folks you work with or have worked with in the past, and call them and ask them, are you going to vote on issue two, and are you going to vote for it? If they say no, well, you just make sure that they don't go vote. Let the air out of it. Hire them on. Well, the election has been moved to a different date. That's up to you how you creatively get the job done. But if they say, yeah, I will, then you make sure they do go vote and keep calling.
Yeah, haw, haw, haw. Ain't that funny, Albert?
Don't tee-hee, tee-hee.
Yeah, let the air out of their tires. Make sure they don't go vote.
Hmm. No tee-hee. Take them for a train ride. Tee-hee. That's the mindset. We know it. We know it. We know it. That's the kind of mind that comes up with those things. That's, you know, yeah, he's joking, but he's serious.
Yeah, because...
Look at their actions.
Well, you know, that's what the giggles are for—to hide the truth behind. It's like, it's like the my childhood friend. The only way his mother, when he was a little bitty boy, the only way his mother could get him to eat his vegetables was to hide it behind a little dollop of chocolate pudding.
Ooh.
Yeah, the broccoli, the asparagus doesn't work for me either. But apparently, that's how he ate his vegetables when he was a little bitty boy. And that's what these right-wing Republican audiences are. Ho, 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 listen to that. He's talking about slitting somebody's throat. Ho, tee, hee, hee, listen. He's talking about letting the air out of somebody's tires, keeping from voting. Ho, that's just precious. No, they mean it.
If you have employees, you know, keep them on work. Don't give them time off. Work will set you free. Oh, Saturday Night Live is, they're bullies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, isn't that precious?
They're bullies. Ugh.
Bro Fro Mix, Rick Sanctum Santorum, whining about being given, you know, just given a little bit of a treatment on Saturday Night Live. It's just like anti-gay bullying. You know, that guy is so far removed from anything, and you know, he calls himself a Christian. He's so far removed from anything resembling, Christianity or give a damn.
Or American,
yeah.
He's an Iranian double agent. I think he was born. He is. Like, if not president, not sure, is the Kenyan usurper. Rick Santorum is an Iranian double agent.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, he says being bullied, criticism of his filthy politics is just like, like Albert, just like kids being bullied into suicide.
Yeah.
Right, because finding your beloved child drowned or hanged or pilled or gunned by their own hand, that's just like somebody making fun of the fact that Rick Santorum is a hate-filled hypocrite. It is the exact numerical mathematical equivalent, isn't it, Albert?
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, he was in a whole 2.8-second, you know, clips in that whole sketch. He was not even in it for a second, so maybe they're just bullying him, you know, because they only showed him with some gay guys and, you know, and in between them feeling uncomfortable, and that's pretty much all they did. That's all they did. That's it. That's bullying. 0.8 seconds of bullying because for just pointing out to how, you know, uncomfortable homosexuals make you, that you would, you know, compare legalizing gay marriage to, you know, man on dog sex and everything else that you do. He's a Latvian rifleman that shoots Bim Bomb the Cloud. That's the kind of guy he is. He would fit seamlessly in any totalitarian regime throughout history. It doesn't matter what it is. He's a true believer, a complete authoritarian, and that's the kind of person he is. Any criticism. He could have been in Saddam's cabinet, Pinochet's cabinet, anyone. Oh, you're making fun of the great leader? Why isn't he in North Korea right now? Oh, that's right, because he's a double agent over here for them working for... that's destroying America.
Yeah, and meanwhile, At the same time that he's saying that him getting a little joshing for 1.2 seconds on Saturday Night Live is just like a child, a teenager committing suicide, well, the following was posted by a kid in Canada. Well, he posted, "I'm a casualty of love. Well, I'm tired of life, really. It's so hard. I'm sorry. I can't take it anymore. First, I'd like to mention my friends Nancy, Abby, Colleen, Gemma, and Keisha. Being sad is sad. I've been like this for way too long. I can't stand school. I can't stand Earth. I can't stand society. I can't stand the scars on my arms. I can't effing stand any effing thing. I don't want my parents to think this is their fault either. I love my mom and dad. It's just too hard. I don't want to wait 3 more years. This hurts too much. How do you even know it'll get better? It's not. I hit rock effing bottom, fell through a crack, and now I'm stuck. My favorite singers were Lady Gaga, Adele, Katy Perry, and Jesse James. Christina Aguilera, and most of all, I think, Keisha. Loved singing, and she helped me a lot. I'm not that good at it, though. I'm going to miss you guys. Well, you know who you are, but to the people who didn't like me, many of them, a big fuck you. Go ride a unicorn. But we love you anyway. Remember me as a unicorn. Maybe in my next life I'll be a flying squirrel. I'll fly away." And he killed himself because he was gay.
That's terrible.
And that is just like Rick Santorum being criticized.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, of course.
You know, if there's no proof of it, I'm going to go ahead and have my really hateful moment of the program this evening because, you know, you're really good and balancing and everything, Albert, and I appreciate it. And so maybe if Rick Santorum's out there contemplating suicide because of what they said about him on Saturday Night Live, I want him to. Because then it will be just like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so, he's a paper Christian, and you know they don't play that game. You know, they don't walk the walk. They don't walk the walk.
Oh, no.
No. You know, to them, you know, why should they have to pay taxes for someone to get health care? You know, Jesus never said anything like that. You know, people should, you know, pick themselves up by their own bootstraps, but if they don't own boots, you know, well, too bad.
What? You don't have any boots? Oh, that's too bad for you.
Oh, you know, I mean, everyone should be treated equally, but, you know, some people should be treated more equally.
Right, a rising tide lifts all boats. What? You don't have a boat? Don't try to get in mine.
Yeah, too bad. You know, and...
How long can you tread water?
Yeah, oh yeah. I hope you're in shape. I mean, he's a disgusting. I mean, you know, he's just disgusting. It just is, it makes my blood curdle to how, I mean, and he's not alone, and he's just one of them. There's hordes of them. I mean, James O'Keefe, look at this, remember him? They keep talking about him like he's done anything. What has he done? What did he do? He talked to some, you know, good-intentioned liberals at Acorn and then spliced a bunch of things together and made it look like they were saying horrible things. They went after Planned Parenthood with the same kind of crap. They hired women to flirt with Anthony Weiner, and he showed them a picture of his pee-pee. Oh, you know.
In the underwear.
In the, well, no, bro, you know, Breitbart, you know, or the Sergeant Stadenko over there. He got the goods. I've got the real picture here on my phone.
I know, because I masturbate to it.
Constantly. Oh, look at this. How can you not? Oh, look at that. Oh, it's so veiny. I'm sorry. He's just disgusting. He's Sergeant Stadenko. Is that guy not Sergeant Stadenko?
He is. Part? He's Sergeant Stadenko. You're right.
On Dust. On Angel Dust, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's just... he's just...
Horse-tranked out of his mind.
Yeah, that guy's... Oof. And then his, you know, I'll tell you one thing. One nice thing about James O'Keefe. One nice thing about his little, shallow, wretched life. He doesn't have to shave. And razor blades are very expensive. And, I mean, you know, I don't know what billionaire sugar daddy these guys have that are doing it, but I'll tell you what, you know, with Mach 3 razor blades costing $15 for two or four of them, whatever it is, you know, with all the, lack of results these guys are getting for that guy who's ever bedridden, you know, can't you just see it? Their sugar daddy, it has to be some guy in some white room, right, and he's in his bed, and he's got attendants and a big giant mansion, you know, with the fountain and everything, but he's stuck in the bed.
Rosebud.
Yeah, like that, or the one that Hannibal Lecter chewed on his face, or something. Like that guy. That's what it is. That's their sugar daddy. It has to be some freak like that. And oh yeah, get me the liberals. Go kill the Tides Foundation. It has to be. I don't even understand where these people are even coming from. You know, it's like, you know, they always like to call us, you know, liberals, Marxists and stuff. But that just shows you how much they don't know about history. You know, the liberals really, you know, yeah, all right. They're on the Marxist side, I guess. But, you know, Lenin wasn't the... They didn't want Lenin in Russia. But, they didn't have the internet then. So guys like that can kind of bull rush and get into this, you know, these positions of power. I mean, you remember, I don't know how much you know about the Russian Revolution, but there were the sailors of, Sedanko, whatever it was, that island fortress outside Petrograd. You know, they were the ones that wanted democracy. They were the ones that got, you know, and they got crushed, you know, of course, because they didn't have the internet. They didn't have the information.
Yeah, I mean, the German government paid for Lenin to go to Russia.
Oh, that's what they say, you know, and...
they bought the ticket.
Yeah, hey, well, get out of Switzerland, wherever he was. You know, but Lenin, you know, it's like the same thing. It's like, you know, just because somebody says something that makes sense... Well, every once in a while, Ron Paul says things that make sense. Right? That's why I say a broken clock. The man is a broken clock. And it's nice to see that some of the things... I mean, he is absolutely right about it. Look, do you see the latest result on the latest poll on cannabis legalization?
Higher in favor than it's ever been. Naturally, of course, the President Not Sure administration is cracking down for all it's worth on the medical marijuana dispensaries in California.
And that is a filthy thing, but once again, look at where we got to be. He has to have his knee there. He has to have his knee to hold down the hips. He has to do it. He can't finish in this first round. He has to go to the next round. We need a second term. I mean, you can call me an Obama bot or what have you.
No, you're far too willing to be critical of the screw-ups to ever be an Obama bot, Albert. I mean, and I don't even like that term. I really despise that term. Just as much as I despise the way that that side talks about anyone who dares criticize.
Traitor.
Absolutely. You know, well, you're no Democrat. Oh, Jesus, I've only been registered that way for, well, you know, 30 years.
Liberal. Well, then look at that. Liberal is a curse word. Since when? How? And there are certain things that I'm just not going to allow, and I'm not going to allow President Perry. I can't just lay there and let a President Perry. I can't.
No, because you've got two beautiful little reasons not to let President Perry happen.
And you know what breaks my heart? You know what really does break my heart? Because my girls, you know, I mean, you got to think about it, you know, when they were, what are they, seven, so they were like 3.5 years old when they went to see him, and oh, every time they seen a picture, oh, it's President Obama. Oh, look, it's Obama. And they like him. I mean, you know, he's got one of those, you know, faces that babies tend to like. And, you know, he's got, he's, you know, comfortable to look at. So he was. And now when they see him, and I do know all the nuances, it pains me to think about the day that I have to, that if I would have to tell them. And I am going to have to tell them. I mean, I'm going to have to tell them. And it's going to break their little heart. What do you mean he's not doing the right thing? But it doesn't matter even in terms of that. He still deserves a second shot. President Carter deserve a second shot. You know,
You may have just nailed the dismount right there, Albert. We deserve a second shot.
Yeah. Our quarters are on the game machine. They're there, and we're playing. This is our turn. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this. Yeah, he didn't let. Yeah, he's going to drill in the yard. Yeah. Those are things that he's taking bullets away. I hope he doesn't do it. I hope he's smarter than that. I really do. I mean, and you think about it, even on the people who, maybe they don't go as far as we'd like, but even on the middle of the roaders, he's got to have, I mean, they're still making sense. Everyone knows the directions we need to go into. Everyone knows this. It just goes without saying. You know, you sit there and you talk, you know, it makes me laugh. I've had a few friends on the Facebook, which I don't really participate in, but I do watch here and there. And, they're sitting there, you're like, oh, I'm not a 99%er. I wouldn't have any friends. I call them associates. You know, people that know within my spheres of influence. And, you know, a friend of mine said, then, you know what? Listen, if you think that I made a mistake, 3 years ago when I decided to go try to get a, go to get my education, go to law school, do this and that, please let me know now so I can unfriend you. And that's a beautiful thing to start hearing people start saying. Like, how dare you sit here and try to think that and try to boil what Occupy Wall Street about is because I owe money on college tuition. Where do you come up with this? I mean, you think that that's a reason that's going to stop back this tidal wave that's been coming at us for the past 100 years? You know, the last tidal wave broke with the robber barons. And the next one, which is this one, is even bigger, and it's been coming ever since. Right? What are they, right? They're going after. They're trying to, right? They're going to kill government, make it so big and bloated that they can go in and kill it. Right? And they're going to take away Social Security. They're going to sit there and take away Medicare. They're going to sit there and defund education. And they're going to sit there and destroy the EPA. And they're going to, which Nixon gave us. But anyway, they're going to continue to sit there. And any kind of progress we've ever made, these are the enemies of the state. They are the enemies of the state. The state is there, right? By the people, right? We're sitting there going where life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, right? And those are inalienable rights. And those rights are sitting there and are supported by the government that is instituted by us. And they want to destroy that. What is going to be left when they destroy that? Some Ayn Rand nonsense? These people don't even know their own archetypes. They don't even understand their own, heroes, right? We all know Ayn Rand was sitting there using Medicare and Social Security at her end of her days. These people don't understand hypocrisy, and it just knows no bounds. It's just unbelievable.
Well, because among other things, from an analytical standpoint, Albert, they have the baggers and whatnot have constructed a wall of disbelief around anything they choose not to like. So if you look at a bagger, Randy and whatever, and you say, well, Ayn Rand, she died on Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Where'd you hear that?
Propaganda.
Well, God, it's all over. Just search. That's just liberal media.
Yeah.
I'm not. You probably got that off some liberal website.
Mm.
I don't have to believe it just because you say it. You don't have the URL for me right here, right now. I know you're lying to me just like the liberal media does every day.
Mm.
And, speaking of liberal media, yeah, did you see these poll results that came out?
No, I haven't.
Or not poll results, but analysis results. The folks out there at Pew, P-E-W,
mm-hmm.
not Le Pew, Pew.
No, the folks that stole the artwork that Philadelphia guy had, right? I forget his name, sorry, in that document.
Well, they did an analysis of the tone of news coverage of all candidates from May 2nd to October 9th, which is a pretty damn broad cross-section for that kind of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the walk-away, Albert. During no week in the 5 months studied was coverage of Mr. Obama more than 10% positive. On average, it was judged to be about 57% neutral and about 34% negative.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the single greatest proportion of positive coverage of any candidate in that time period was received by Rick Perry.
Oh, goodness.
coming in second was Mussolini. Coming in third was Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, goodness.
Fourth, Herb Cain. Fifth, Romney. Sixth, Santorum. Ron Paul. John Huntsman. Newt Gingrich. Tim Pawlenty. Tim Pawlenty polled at 12% positive. And then, bringing up the rear, is Barack Obama at 9% positive. 34% negative.
And you know what? Real quick, if I just must say, we know who these media people are. We know who they work for. We know who they are. And we know how much, you know, both sides of the aisle, I mean, we always say how much we hate them. But we are the media. We are the media. You are the one that is in the grocery line talking to somebody. You're the one that doesn't let somebody sit there and say, oh, yeah, we don't have jobs. And you sit there and you tell them, hey, listen, boom, boom, boom. You see your friends on Facebook or your stupid cousin say something just completely just absurd. So you have to go into this whole long thing. And da, 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 da. But you know what? You should do it because we are the media. It's up to us to inform each other. You know, if someone doesn't know, oh, you know, don't touch that pan, it's hot. You got to tell them, hey, don't touch that, it's hot. It's in your nature to do it, and you're going to do it, so just do it. We know where the chips are falling. We know this. These media types, they know that they're the century. Who owns them? You know, we do have MSNBC, and we have a couple shows here, and a couple of this that they tell our point of view and things that are, you know, like Rachel Maddow and, you know, Keith Olbermann and the Adon. You know, that's current TV, but you know, you can still watch that online. You go to rtv.net or .tv or whatever, and you can watch all that stuff on straight up. See, right? You don't need no cable. You can watch all this stuff now and be your own media source. You're the one that does the reading. You're the one that does this. We listen to the horn. We listen to this. We listen to that. I was listening to, speaking of liberal media, you know, the blogs, which is liberal media. We just do internet better. Driftglass, and they have their little thing, you know, their little podcast that they have. And Driftglass said an interesting thing.
And they do a great job, too.
Yeah, they do. But they were talking, and it was like I was listening to a couple of archives, and he said that right-wingers, and this just struck me, it just, you know, right-wingers are the people who, through history, are the ones that can stand on overpasses of highways and throw cinder blocks down on the traffic below. But we're not. We're not. We can't afford that. They can afford to do that. We can't afford to do that. We can't afford to primary Obama. We can't afford to not vote. We have to vote. We can't let Huckabee, you know, oh, well, yeah, maybe you shouldn't vote anyway. You're right. He's right. Obama didn't do what I wanted him to do, so I'm not voting. Screw that. Your ass needs to vote. I know I'm going to hold my nose, too. But I'll tell you what, I'd rather hold my nose and vote than, you know, close my eyes and not vote and then sit there and try to ride out the next.
Well, right, and see, I really like my comparison of say Caligula to Marcus Aurelius.
Yes, yes.
And there is not a single one in that Repiglican that Repiglican field that is not a Caligula in waiting.
For real. And they'll never listen. They'll never listen to us. Obama wants to hear a little bit.
Okay, you've had a couple of movie references. It's my turn.
Okay, yes, sir.
You remember the great animated classic Heavy Metal?
Yes.
Give me back the Lochnar. It's mine, bitch. Remember the little guy just draped across the throne there as they were getting ready to start throwing the virgins to Ulatek?
Mm-hmm.
The whole Republican field is that guy or his loopy sister.
Yeah.
As long, you know, I want the power. Just throw the damn virgin to the sea monster. And, you know, we're the virgin.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, we really can't allow that to happen. I mean, you know, just like the Russian Revolution, you know, those people really couldn't afford to let Lenin come into power, but they did. And, you know, just like in 1979, we as a people couldn't really afford to let Ronald Reagan come to power, and we did.
Yeah, and by the way, Jim just wrote into, just with a point of history, the ship outside Petrograd was the Aurora.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, well, you know, that we have to be those sailors, because we are those people. That's us. You know, those people didn't want communists. They didn't want gulags. They didn't want that. They wanted bread. And they wanted a democracy.
Right, the Arab Spring in Cairo was ostensibly about freedom and democracy, but at its most street level, it was about the fact that human beings could not afford the requisite amount of money to buy enough bread to live to tomorrow.
Yep, Yeah, well, yeah.
And when you get in, and when you get into that kind of narrow-margined calculus,
mm-hmm.
you're in a very, very bad place.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why
and,
we have.
And you know, coming soon to a United States near you.
Mm-hmm. We have to remain diligent.
And it may come with or without Obama. Frankly, I mean, I think we're all realistic enough to recognize this. You know, what we may be witnessing is the collapse of a self-consumptive system of capitalism that has run to its reductio ad absurdum. And the question will be between two people, who's going to make it worse? Because you know what? None of those creatures on the Republican side are ever going to favor a damn breadline, okay? When people are starving, they will not, because it's again the Constitution's 10th Amendment or some such, you know, which they haven't read. For us to use federal dollars to feed bellies.
Yeah.
Right? We can't have no soup lines, nor bread.
Mm-hmm.
That'd violate our Austrian economic principles of libertarian free marketism.
Yeah. And they've had their turn. And that's the thing. You know, I mean, speaking of my beautiful girls, right now that's what I'm going through. I'm going through this sharing aspect where it's more of about, they don't want to share. It's about it's a fear of being bored. You know, entertain me for a second. You know, she doesn't want to be bored. So, and due to that, she's afraid of being bored. And that fear is the mind killer. And that fear makes her be selfish. And that fear is what makes her, you know, resist and do this and do that. So now she's not. You know, there's no game. There is no game. You're not allowed to do games. Because you're going to sit here and you're going to worry about what can you do to overcome this fear of being bored. Because obviously if you think a game is going to sit there and make you, you know, unbored, then you're already a boring person. And I'm not going to tolerate that. I'm
not going to raise that.
No, I'm not. It's not going to happen. So this is what it is. And when you're from till further notice, this is what you're at. No game. You can't even watch. She can't even watch them now because she can't not just even sit there and let her sister flap a turn. She has to. She still has to control her. And if she, you're not doing what I want. And it's an amazing thing that I think. You know, granted, I think maybe I'm a little bit late, but a lot sooner than a lot of others. But I'm going to nip that right in the bud right now, and she's going to learn how to control her mind. And I mean, this is what we have to do. We have to control our mind. We can't allow fear to overcome us. We can't allow apathy to give us another Walker, because that's what happens with apathy. Apathy gives us Walker. Apathy gives us Hitler. You know, apathy gives us Stalin and Lenin and all these guys. That's who Pol Pot. George Bush, the monsters of history, and they are monsters. I don't care if they're American, Korean. I don't care what they are. There's no nationality that is monster resistant. It's always there in power. And we cannot afford apathy. We can never afford apathy. We have to remain diligent, or Lenin comes, or Hitler comes, or whoever. You pick the monster. They're always there. And they don't even have to be full-blitzed monsters. They could be like little slimy, disgusting, you know.
Well, okay, classic case in point. Now, no one is more into nonviolence than I.
Mm.
But even I had to sit up and go, what the... Back. What did Mike Stark call him? That pill popping impotent propagandist?
Yeah.
Or impotent pill popping propagandist? The Flush Flimball?
Yeah.
Now, David in Tennessee sent this to me last night with a recommendation that this has to wedge its way into Moran Monday somewhere. And naturally, Albert, of course, you have opened the door.
Yeah, thank you.
On the 14th, which was Friday. With the announcement that 100 military advisors were going into Africa to help resistance to or help defeat the Lord's Resistance Army. You know, Jesus, it sounds like somebody that would be that would register to vote for Michelle Bachmann, you know.
They're pretty scary. I mean, I've been
the Lord's Resistance Army is nasty. They kidnap children, brainwash children, turn them into their, you know, turn them into their little 12-year-old soldiers with AK-47s.
Yep.
They are Ugandan, among other things. They're the people who the support, among other things, the Ugandan urge to, you know, kill people for being gay.
Yeah, which is, have you seen that Vanguard documentary?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, isn't that just unbelievable? It's unbelievable. I mean, you knew, you heard it, and I've read the article, but when you see the images, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, you can't walk away.
Really? This is real? Really? Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, and so, you know, President Obama announces that we're sending 100 military advisors, and of course the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and, you know, who knows, we may get all our guys home from Afghanistan and Iran just in time to send them to Africa, or Iraq, just in time to send them to Africa. I hope not. This guy's a thug and needs to, you know, and I'm the anti-war guy. So, on Friday, the impotent pill-popping propagandist takes to the air to declare, and I'm not going to play the tape.
Yeah, please don't.
Or the digital file, yeah. No, instant, no, it's just me. My friends, President Obama has deployed troops to another war in Africa. They are Christians. They are fighting the Muslims in Sudan. And Obama has sent troops, United States troops, to remove them from the battlefield, which means kill them. So that's a new war, 100 troops to wipe out Christians. But it's no surprise, my friends, because he sent help to the Egyptians to wipe out the Christians.
God.
I mean, this guy, he's totally freaking gone. And then he was so proud of himself, though, because he doesn't do this, Albert. He's so proud of himself that he puts up a Rush transcript of it. He really thinks he's on to something. You know, my friends, the Kenyan Marxist with anti-colonialist intentions who has a deep-seated hatred of white people is attacking the Christians in Africa.
Look at me. Yeah. Then you wonder why every once in a while those crazy relatives of yours send you one of them forward emails.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure this is just all over. And that brethren and sister and that fine, upstanding Christian Rush Limbaugh, the one who reverences marriage so much that his wives keep showing up on milk cartons, has recently identified how Barack Obama is attacking the poor, benighted Christians of Uganda.
Yeah, okay.
No, that'll be in my box by tomorrow from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Brian Fisher will monologue on it after he gets done, you know, whanging away on the grizzly bears some more. Oh!
Yeah, well, they tried to warn us, and there he is. He's starting the crusade. He's a Kenyan usurper.
With a deep-seated hatred of white people. My friends, it wouldn't be called the Lord's Resistance Army if it wasn't an army of Christians, now would it?
Now wouldn't they just back up something like that? Wouldn't they just do something like that?
Since when is Flush Flimball a godforsaken peacenik, Albert?
Only when it serves his purpose. And, I mean, you know, think about it. He's a peacenik in support of. I mean, the Lord's Resistance Army is one of the most hideous blemishes on the human consciousness for the past, 20 years. You know, I mean, if you're not aware of the things they have done, I mean, that have just been documented.
I mean, Jesus, Pat Robertson hasn't even come out in favor of the Lord's Resistance Army. That says something.
I mean, come on. They use child soldiers, and you know how that works. They make them kill somebody in their family. Well, they killed somebody else. Forget it. That's one of the things. I'd love to be able to visit Africa, but I've seen too many documentaries. I can't. I just couldn't. I couldn't function. It's too this is what's going on this continent. But to support it, what? You know, now I'm not trying to say that I want to go to war. You know, but I'm also, how many guys, and they flipped out about Libya. And I know we did too a little bit. I understand. We're peace. We love peace. But, you know, Gaddafi was, you know, strafing his people with jets.
Well, he is a dick.
And yeah, he is kind of an asshole that we've wanted to bomb forever. So what is, you know, now, you know, and how many U.S. troops have died in Libya? How many?
Any?
And I don't think we have. I don't. And we. I mean, we've got
some maybe some CIA operatives that they're not releasing the names.
Yeah, maybe a few of them. Maybe, maybe. And you know, this is the thing. You know, I mean, that's what they. That's what they do. That's what they've always done, and that's what they're going to continue to do until we make a fundamental change in our approach to our environment. You know, it's like you know. Well, the game isn't the issue. The fear is. You know, like. You know, I understand the war, but it's our approach to things. We wouldn't be in Iraq if we weren't so petroleum dependent, would we? Would we really?
Of course not.
Of course not. We all know this. We wouldn't be there. That's why we're there. We wouldn't give two squirts for that whole area of the whole world if it wasn't for that. And we all know it. World War I was started over Iraq. And I mean, that's a fact. That's what started the temperature to rise, because Germany wanted to build a railroad, and the Ottoman Empire was willing to do that, but BP wasn't. And of course, Archduke Ferdinand was the spark, but that's what started it, and it was all over that. This is what, and then we have World War II, because World War I wasn't finished. We're not done. And it's always over resources. That's what war is about. It always has been. It always will be about resources. It's never over ideology, unless you're a crazy man. And they don't tend to do what we do.
No, but by God, that goober in the Lord's Resistance Army, ring the bell. You know, if Reverbo was here, he'd ring the bell for the crazy man. Because, I mean, no, he has visions and stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a madman. Yeah, they all are. You know, it's like this. You know, it's like they're.
The Lord spoke to me last night. Children were putting gasoline on your waffles this morning.
Yeah, cocaine and gunpowder. Snort it up. I mean, in Africa, God, Africa just breaks my heart. It really does. You know, Africa, it's like this micro, it's a macrocosm of almost everything that's wrong with the species. I mean, there are a lot of things that are good about.
Well, and who made what's wrong with the species in Africa wrong?
We all. Yeah.
Germans, so. French, English, yeah, Portuguese, Spanish, Portuguese. Belgians?
Belgians?
Belgians? Really? Belgians? Yes, Belgians.
The Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, this is our, I mean, we made this mess. Now, this is the finished result. Now, it's time to, now, as in terms of history, 2011, 2012, it's time to start a new recipe. It's time to start a new, you know, a new recipe in the kitchen. We've already been served this meal. It's time for a new meal. Nobody wants to eat this meal. We need a new meal. We need a new meal, and then we need to plan tomorrow's meal, and the meal after that, and the meal after that, and the meal after that, and the meal after that. This isn't McDonald's. There are no more road stops. There are no Culver's. There's none of that. We need to make a meal, a wholesome meal made out of stuff that we can all eat. You know, it's funny you talk about, yeah, you should. Plow up your grass. What the hell is it? What is it doing other than grow some vegetables, grow some herbs, grow some of these things. You can provide so much food on your own little plot of land around you. It would blow your mind.
Hey,
you
boy, run outside and pluck us a salad in the front yard.
There you go.
You know what? Exactly. That's not crazy. That's the epitome of sane, frankly.
Yeah, amen. Amen, Brother Bob. You know, I mean, and if we're going to fight the morons, we're going to have to fight the morons. And this is, you know, we can't shy away from this war. You know, Lord's Resistance Army, they're a bunch of morons. And, you know, these Republicans, they're a bunch of morons. And I'm not trying to, you know, we're not talking violence, but we can't just lay down and let them run roughshod over us, because they will. They will. They don't play fair. They run over us with cleats and step hard. They don't mess around. And they don't go for, oh, I stepped on your foot. They don't step for the foot, Bob. They go between the legs, and they step hard. And then they make sure they walk, and they really get on your solar plexus, right under your, right at the bottom of your rib cage. That way they have enough left in their stride to continue and put their heel on your face. We can't just sit here and lay in apathy with these people. We can't play games with them. yes, Barack Obama is not our knight in shining armor. He's not going to do anything like that, but he will at least we can say he has to listen to us. I mean, and, at least we have that.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, this is a form of dialogue, Albert, and you got a little pushback here from our buddy Andy.
Okay.
He says, Mr. Obama is irrelevant. He's going to do what he does to keep screwing us no matter what we do at the polling place. He says, I wish Albert would get off Mr. Obama. He's not with us. He's not on our side. All he is a politician extraordinaire who's doing his damnedest to get reelected. So be it. Let's move on. We're screwed either way. The corporatocracy is the only winner in this rigged system of Democratic or Republican winner. The corporatocracy wins either way. We lose either way.
No. Our idea must be preserved. Because that's what this country is. It's an idea. Our idea has to be preserved. We're seeing the resistance against this corporate. You see, this is the thing. Now, here on the Horn, how long have we been talking about this? How long have we been talking about this? And it's been one of these things that it's been an underlying, you know, layer in the conversation for years and decades. And we're not the only ones, and that by all means. But here it is, and it's starting to come to a head. It's coming to the surface. Now we're talking about corporate greed. Now we're talking about it. Now it's coming into people's consciousness. And this is a huge thing. And nobody, how can you support it when I could pull a dollar out of my pocket and say, this is more money than ExxonMobil paid in income taxes.
Well, than GE paid.
Than GE paid.
Than Bank of America paid.
This is more. This right here in your pocket. So, you know, you sit there and you say, you know, come on. This is a big thing, people. This is something that yes, we know he's a politician. Yes. But we're gonna let we can't let them get it again. Another Bush.
Well, I come back to what I said, Albert. If we just say devil take the hindmost, and we'll rise from the ashes. I don't know who's gonna rise, because I reiterate, that's gonna be us in the ashes.
We're the wood. We're the kindling. We're the faggots, the bundles of sticks. That's what that means.
Yep.
And that's what we are.
You know, we're not at the table, as my buddy Rick Smith says. We're on the menu.
Oh yeah, we're what cooks the meal. I mean, we are the ones that are going to get burned, no matter what way we shake it. So we might as well stand up and do something. I mean, there's nothing else we can do. We don't have, in a national, the way our electoral systems, we don't have room for a third party right now. We don't.
Well, it's not even a question of room. It's a question of systems functionality. Our system, you know, until such time as we have a constitutional convention, at which time the corporations will run it, We don't have a parliamentary system. You know, Jesus, if you win 5% of the popular vote in Germany, you get 5% of the seats in the parliament. We don't do that.
Yeah, no, we don't. And it would be lovely if we did. It'd be lovely. It'd be a nice thing.
Yeah, we'd have a hell of a lot better chance, Albert. We damn sure would. Brother, this has been a magnificent conversation and a great way to start a Monday. Good luck, you know. Good luck being Switzerland between the girls. I know a little bit about that.
Amen. I know you do, brother. All right, be good, and give my love to Agnes and everyone else, and we'll talk later, brother.
Thank you kindly. Take care.
Be good.
Bye. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. And never mind. I'll get to that as time permits. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Just two things, referencing what Albert was talking about. You remember in the Soviet Union, at the height of communism, when they had all those collective farms and things?
Right.
Nearly one-fourth to 40% of all vegetables and foodstuffs were grown on little private plots called artels that the government permitted people to have. Because the collective farms really did not work that well.
And that was the only means by which the peasantry had a means of feeding itself, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, absolutely, because when the collective farms would produce what they did, the government came and took most of the stuff from the people and left them with very little.
And, of course, you know, that went hand-in-hand with five-year tractor plans and the massive, you know, massive wishful thinking planning. But ultimately, it was people who took the seriousness of their continued existence into their own hands and succeeded by just about any measure you would care to put to it by nothing but, well, hard work, right?
Oh, yeah. That was a bleak period in Russian history when they started the collectivization and stuff like that. That was a horrible thing. And the second thing I wanted to mention, and he referenced World War One, and the case of Fedaris, the case of Belli for that particular war. And this was one of the questions in my oral exams for my master's. And the driving force behind German militancy, equal to the army, if not surpassing it, actually Fritz Fischer says it surpassed it, was the German business community.
Because they stood to make a mark, right?
Exactly.
War. There's no getting around the fact that war is good business for some. You know, there was a reference in the chat room just a few minutes ago to General Smedley Butler, and he kind of nailed it to the wall, and it hasn't lost its relevance since. You know, that famous book that he authored, War is a Racket.
Oh yeah, it is. It's very profitable for some. Not so profitable for others. Rich man's war, poor man's fight.
Exactly that, Jim. Exactly that.
All right. You got other callers.
All right. You take care, Jim. You doing all right?
Fair.
Hang in there. Hang in there. Good to talk to you. Bye now. Jim, with a little bit of historical perspective. And damned relevant. Whether it was Vietnam or Iraq, either of them, Bush War One, Bush War Two, or Afghanistan, hasn't there always been a profit motive? You know, do please remember, with Bush War Two, it was done on a hot check. But we paid Halliburton to feed our troops instead of the typical mess halls and mess tents of military fame or infamy, depending on whether you served or not. I'll never forget that one panel by Gary Trudeau, Doonesbury. Ray, the sergeant, standing in line, I'll have a Halliburger with cheese. And the kid behind the counter says, that'll be $29. It's what we did. $29 for Halliburton to feed what turned out to be rotting meat and rancid vegetables to our servicemen and women. And speaking of servicemen and women, I don't think it would be appropriate to let this Monday go past without sharing this little piece of audio. A United States Marine. You know what went down in Times Square over the weekend, right? Occupy Wall Street spilled into Times Square, and the police, the NYPD... squandered all the goodwill that was generated for them on September the 11th, 2001, in October of 2011. They were heavy-handed, to say the least. But one man was there. One man was there. And he spoke truth to those police. And for whatever reach this program has, I want to do a little bit of honor to this man by letting you hear his words. I found it over at Alternet. Pass it around. Share it around. This is the kind of heroism, and it was heroism, to stare down a bunch of well-armed cops when you yourself are unarmed. Just listen.
Why are you gearing up like this war? This is not war!
Let's go, folks. We can
this is not war! Why am I acting like this? No one has guns! It takes a tough guy to act like this!
Let's go, folks.
Don't hurt me without him! Nobody's trying to hurt you, guys! There are no bullets flying out here!
Folks, we can
there are no bullets flying! How tough are you? How tough are you? How do you sleep at night?
Guys,
there is no honor in this! There is no honor in this! None! None! There is no honor in this! You can laugh all you want! But it takes a coward to hurt an unarmed civilian! There is no honor in this! There is no honor in this! There is no honor in this!
There is no honor in this. This is not a war zone. There are no bullets flying here. Why are you doing this? Those are the words of Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas of Roosevelt, New York. In other remarks, he yelled to the police, "I spent 14 months in Iraq for my country. My mama spent time in Iraq for our country. My daddy spent time in Afghanistan for our country. Why are you doing this? These are unarmed American citizens. Why are you doing this?" You may have heard the other night our good friend Mark from Florida call in and say that the Marines do not allow their decorations to be casually used. And he was right. Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas was in Times Square wearing his BDUs with a chest full of campaign ribbons. Asking NYPD Blues why they were there hurting their fellow citizens. The answer, of course, is plain, is it not? The New York Police Department was there because the power sent them there. If they had been sent to gun down American citizens in the street, they would have done so without a second thought. $4.6 million to the New York Police Foundation buys a lot of acquiescence. Is there a right winger out there who would dare say a word to contradict Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas? Would some chicken hawk dare gainsay Shamar Thomas? Sadly, I think they probably wouldn't hesitate. about you? These chicken hawks, these economic royalists, these one percenters. Will do as they are told. But that police response in Times Square was a manifestation, again, of what I have described on a number of occasions as the fear that is beginning to percolate among those who have almost all of it, but want it all, what little we have left. As I mentioned earlier, Joe Scarborough, for whom the questions surrounding the untimely and suspicious death of Lori Klausutis will forever be, I hope, an albatross about his neck. As Klausutis' autopsy had to be performed by an unlicensed coroner from Missouri. Remember Lori Klausutis? Don't forget her. But Joe Scarborough is a millionaire. He is a part of the 1%. And his smarmy, mocking proclivities were on full display early this morning.
Let's get a check on business before the bell. It's CBC's Melissa Francis. She's live at the New York Stock Exchange, and she has yet to be dragged out into the streets kicking and screaming. What's going on?
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I've yet to do that. Although when you come in, even at this hour, you can't ignore Occupy Wall Street. Even though it's much quieter at this hour, there's just a maze of fences all around the outside of the exchange. There's security everywhere. Meanwhile, we're watching Europe, where protests erupted over the weekend, especially in Rome. There's supposed to be a plan coming out of Europe, at least a piece of it, later this week to solve the debt crisis. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, this is a three-point plan. It's sort of the plan to get together, to make a plan to solve the crisis. This had futures positive earlier this morning on the hopes that this would finally be a solution, but German Chancellor Angela Merkel out later this morning sort of throwing cold water on the whole thing, saying, you know, we're just trying to put together a plan to solve one piece of this. The real thrust of it is a spending problem, and that you guys haven't even come close to solving. At the same time, we're watching earnings here in the U.S. this week. It's a huge week, a full one-third of the S&P 500 reporting. Citi and Wells out earlier this morning. So a lot on our plate down here.
So let me ask you something. Are you people nervous down there? Are they like when they're holding their martinis and you know, are they like, how nervous are they?
First of all, it's way too early for martinis.
Are there top hats
even for me?
Monocles?
Who are you?
Does the ascot askew? Like, how nervous are they down there?
I see, it's sarcasm like this that is fueling this rally right now.
You are the problem.
It's comments like that that is making this whole thing a whole lot worse. We have respected it from the beginning, I tell you.
Yeah.
The place is in lockdown outside. I don't know if you've been down here.
No.
If you've deigned to come down to our neck of the woods.
So
or if you stay there in your ivory tower studio drinking your martini.
So
you just hide it in a coffee cup so nobody knows what you're really drinking, right, Joe?
That's right. She's tough. So what you're telling me is, like, when they get nervous, they're like having to burn a lot of $100 bills. And, like, is that what you're telling me?
Oh, God. I got nothing. I don't know what to tell you. I don't have $100 bills. You're the one that makes the big bucks.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
I'm coming down there tomorrow. Maybe.
It's sarcasm like this that is fueling this right now. First, they ignore you. Then they laugh at you. Then they fight you. Then you win. See how it works. But you know what? Marine Sergeant Shamar Thomas wasn't laughing. He was begging. He was pleading. This is not a war. These are American citizens. I just wonder what it would take to get Joe Scarborough to acknowledge that Occupy Wall Street and the Occupy movement as a whole are American citizens. What would it take? Or does he even have that much humanity to him? I'm coming down there tomorrow, he said. If that's the case, then Wednesday will be another mock fest with lots of comments about bongo drums and smoking pot. Maybe a couple of references to patchouli. And not one damnable instant of consideration for the reality of what drives this movement. Occupy Wall Street is even plugged in with what's going on here. A smaller group yesterday at the same time, on the 15th, at the same time that people were marching toward Times Square, a smaller group marched toward the headquarters of Bank of America's New York City headquarters. Did I say headquarters twice? They carried signs saying coal kills. They staged a die-in. They carried homemade death certificates, death by coal, neurological damage, death certificate, mudslide victim, black lung, cancer. And then they laid down and staged a die-in. Because, you see, for the 99%, the profits of the 1% that come from mountaintop removal mining, those profits are soaked in our blood and wrapped around our bones. And that's fact. So we come to the end of tonight's program. I regret to say that no contributions came in this evening. None. Nights like that make months like the next one harder and harder. Hopefully that will change. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address under the tab called Contribute. If you can, when you can, it is much appreciated. Thanks to everyone who makes this program what it is. First and foremost, those of you who listen, contribute your ideas, your time, your conversation, your email, and yes, your funds. Thanks to the entire volunteer staff of the Horn. Remember, no one here gets paid. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at headonradionetwork.com, my head writer and spiritual advisor David in Tennessee, John Fox. I don't know. I don't know when John sleeps anymore. Seems like he stays mighty busy, but he still has time to keep things like the website going and answer my eternal technical questions. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Since 2002, making liberal progressive radio a reality on the internet and thereby quite possibly saving it altogether. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go, join, become a member, and become thereby a part of the solution here in Appalachia and beyond. Many thanks again to the folks who hosted me and others at the Social Justice Institute last week in Georgia. It is something I shall not soon, if ever, forget. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.